The Wool Grower's Companion, written by Joy Rhodes and read by Edwina Wren. Down the tracks, her father, Ralph Stimson, stood ramrod straight, his grey hair short and neat. He wasn't concerned about the prisoners, glad to get them even, but Kate was worried. To take in soldiers? Men who'd fought Australians in North Africa, fought her husband, Jack? To her, these POWs were still the enemy, even if Italy had changed sides. She scratched at the nape of her neck. Kate had her plait up to come into town, pinned in place under her hat, but keen to escape. Her wayward hair always reminded her of her mother. At 15, Kate had cried in her arms, cried that she was stick-like with a head of number 8 fencing wire. Her mother had hugged her. "But you are pretty," she'd said, "just in a different way. And anyway, being fair-haired and curvy doesn't get the washing in." A pair of black cockatoos watched from a branch of a dead peperina tree. Kate felt the sweat gathering in her nylons between her legs and shifted her feet apart a little. It made no difference. She moved deeper into the shade and glanced again at her father. She loved him dearly, but he was volatile. Excitable, her mother had called it. He should be all right for the moment, though, as he stood with his men, Ed Storch and Keith Grimes. Grimes was their manager. In his 50s, he was about the same age as her father, and they were both returned servicemen from the First War. But Grimes looked younger, not yet grey and without her father's weariness. And Grimes was taller and broader, with heavy eyebrows and a firm mouth. The other man, Ed, Kate liked. At 21, he was younger than Kate by 2 years. He had arms the size of tree trunks, but with his gammy foot, he wasn't fit for service. You'd never know about the foot once he was on a horse, though. He'd been their head stockman since the war started. He was dark, with olive skin that went black in the sun, and Grimes reckoned he must be part Aboriginal. But her father liked Ed and respected him, so Grimes kept quiet. Ed waved at her and pointed towards the horizon. A shape expanded from a dot into an engine and carriages, smoke and dust trailing behind. Soon she felt the first vibrations in the ground under her feet. As the tremors whirled, the din merged into a swell of steam and power. The train's engine, an outsized bottle-green drum, pulled 2 passenger carriages and a long, long line of empty cattle wagons ready for stock to feed the troops. The vibrations, the funnel of the train and its black smoke brought it back to her. The time a bit less than 2 years before when Kate had been there at the station to farewell Jack. Met and wed, and then he was gone, all in just 5 months. Her mother wanted to see Kate settled before she died, and Kate was glad to do that for her. She loved Jack too, of course, and wondered what he was doing right at that moment, whether he was out in the heat of the afternoon. Probably shouting orders at new soldiers, cranky to be in Sydney training men instead of fighting. A blast of the train whistle jolted her, and steel shrieked against steel amid fumes and heat. Coughing lungfuls of thick air, she put her hands over her ears as the train screeched to a stop. Through the smoke and steam, she saw an army staff car coming in from the main road. The smoke drifted away to show weary soldiers standing guard on the end platforms of the first carriage. Garrison battalion to guard the POWs. The windows of both carriages, heavy with soot, had been fixed shut, but for a slit of 2 inches at the top. The carriage next to the grazier's looked empty except for a small shape moving along inside, but the first carriage, the one stopped close to Kate, was full, the inside a solid block of plum colour. She'd read that the bright colour was chosen to make it easy for the public to spot an escaping prisoner of war. Magenta, the tableland's clarion, had called it. Bella, Kate heard from the carriage. Eh, ciao, Bella. The meaning was clear. She ducked behind the shed. Ah, Bella. Her face hot, Kate had a narrow view through the gap between the shed and the tank, of a soldier on the dirt by the carriage, but with luck the POWs couldn't see her. Key in hand, the soldier waved his clipboard for attention. Afternoon all, I'm Corporal Boyle. Oil, the locals had christened him. He checked his clipboard and then called into the crowd. Amian! He pronounced it properly, the S silent. Kate's father had named their property for the first war battle in France, where he'd lost so many friends. Amy bloody N! Oil yelled again. Yes, Keith Grimes replied, curt. The big man went through the crowd, in his uniform of sorts, riding boots, moleskin trousers and blue shirt. Shotgun in arms, Grimes stopped in front of the corporal, his face set. Grimes had been a POW of the Germans in the First War, one of the few Australians to have that honour. He had no time for enemy of any kind.